New year, new deal. But is it the right deal? From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. It is January 1st, 2013. I'm Jeff Horwich. Happy New Year, everybody. And an unusually busy and newsy holiday it has been. We've got some good analysis on this evolving fiscal cliff deal and some informed prognoses on where we go from here from a couple heavy-hitting economists of both parties. Then we will pivot to another not at all controversial topic, Obamacare. And we'll see how one of the most progressive states is doing at setting up its insurance exchange.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
In the wee hours of 2013, members of the Senate overwhelmingly passed their version of a fiscal cliff deal. It would increase income, capital gains, and dividend taxes on individuals making more than $400,000 a year. That was a bitter compromise for Senate Republicans like Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
I know I can speak for my entire conference when I say we don't think taxes should be going up on anyone. But we all knew that if we did nothing, they'd be going up on everyone.
The payroll tax that almost all of us have enjoyed for the past 2 years is also gone. On those automatic spending cuts we've talked so much about, the Senate compromise buys a little bit of time, 2 months, and then those will be looming again, just as lawmakers are forced to grapple with raising the U.S. national debt ceiling. The deal dispenses with some of the other immediate issues that were tied up with the fiscal cliff. The alternative minimum tax goes away for most folks. Expanded child tax credits and earned income tax credits are preserved. President Obama said he regretted, though, that now was not the time, evidently, for the grand bargain on deficit cutting that had once seemed within reach.
With this Congress, that was obviously a little too much to hope for at this time. It may be we can do it in stages. We're going to solve this problem instead in several steps.
As I speak to you now, the latest is that the House will convene this afternoon, but it's not clear yet what members will be considering. Speaker John Boehner has notably not said that he endorses the Senate bill or promised that the chamber will vote on it in its current form. Now we're going to talk through the latest developments with two eminent economists. First up, Randy Krosner. He's a former member of George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors, a former Fed governor. He's now an economist at the Booth School of Business at the University of Chicago. He is in Australia today, actually, but we're very glad to have reached you.
Great to be with you.
We have sort of, maybe temporarily, avoided the cliff, hard to say at this point, but on that score, there is something upon which the president and the Senate Republicans, at least, can declare victory. Is this any kind of victory to you?
Well, it's something, because it shows that at least there may be some ability to negotiate some of these important issues. But it's just really the beginning. It's by no means the end.
We will do this all again, it sounds like, in 2 months or so. Is that right?
Well, in particular, there's really been no action taken on the spending side. And you can't deal with the challenges that we have in the fiscal arena without dealing with spending.
Talk to me a little bit more about the end game here, because this does kick the big deficit questions off for maybe just another couple of months at least. In the name of sound economic policy, in your judgment, what has to happen ultimately here?
One of the most important things is that there be clarity and a reasonable degree of certainty about what the structure and level of taxes will be. It's very hard for firms to make decisions when they have no idea what their tax rates are going to be. Very difficult for individuals to feel confident enough to go out and spend when they don't know whether their taxes are suddenly going to skyrocket.
Do you understand the great fear that we've seen in this process from both sides of the aisle in terms of talking about entitlement cuts? Everybody says it has to happen eventually. Nobody wants to deal with it right now.
For sure. No one ever wants to deal with anything that is painful. But these are the key things that affect the sustainability of the U.S. fiscal situation. We have an aging population. We have enormous promises that have been made to older people in terms of Medicare, Medicaid, and in terms of Social Security. Some restructuring of those promises will unfortunately need to be made in order to keep the U.S. solvent.
Randy Krosner at the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
And now let's talk about this evolving fiscal cliff deal with Alice Rivlin. She was director of the Office of Management and Budget under President Clinton, and he later appointed her vice chair of the Federal Reserve. She's now an economist with the Brookings Institution and a member of President Obama's Debt Commission. Good to talk with you.
Very happy to be here.
You have been on the president's deficit-cutting team. I know you have strong feelings about getting our nation's finances in line. Does much of this look very good to you?
This is a stopgap deal, but it was a good one to do. We were in danger of, as they say, going over the fiscal cliff, which could have meant that everybody's income tax rates would have gone up very quickly, and other undesirable things would have happened, such as the alternative minimum tax applying to millions of additional taxpayers. And spending would have been cut immediately across the board in a rather mindless way. So it is good to get rid of those things, which would have been bad for individual taxpayers and for the economy in general.
The deficit, of course, is what got us here in the first place. Have we moved the needle on that at all so far in this process?
Well, we don't move it very far in this particular deal, but we do get some contentious issues off the table, especially on the tax side. It allows time to get back to the other contentious issues, mostly on the spending side, but also the question of can we reform our tax code so it's simpler and fairer and raises more revenue in the end.
By most projections, we'll be back at this again in about 2 months, taking on those big issues. Is there much that's been learned from this first part of the process that you think might make things more productive next time around?
Well, I think one thing we learned is there's still a very wide gap between Republicans and Democrats on how they want to treat spending and how they want to treat taxes. I hope they can come together in civil conversation over the next few months and try to work some of these things out. That's what we elected them to do. The spirit of the difficulties of the last several weeks does not seem very encouraging, but I'm always hopeful.
Alice Rivlin, among other things, a former vice chair of the Federal Reserve and currently an economist at the Brookings Institution. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stock markets around the world are closed today for New Year's. Yesterday, some 10 hours before the Senate actually passed the fiscal cliff compromise, the S&P 500 closed up 1.7% on hopes of a deal. The Dow Industrial Average gained 166 points, which meant it ended the year up more than 7%. That marks 4 years in a row of gains for the Dow.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The fiscal cliff was hardly the only important deadline today in Washington. Today is the day for the Secretary of Health and Human Services to tell states whether their plans for health insurance exchanges pass muster. These are the new insurance marketplaces that are provided for under Obamacare. In the end, 24 states and the District of Columbia have applied to set up exchanges. Consumers in the rest of the states can use a single federally maintained exchange to help find coverage when the insurance mandate goes into effect a year from today. Oregon is one state that has been near the head of the pack in setting up its exchange. That is called Cover Oregon, and Rocky King is the executive director. Mr. King, how are you?
I'm fine, Jeff. How are you?
I am well, thanks. Now, I know it's early yet, but from the consumer perspective, how will this thing work?
Well, I think the best way to describe it for Oregon is just picture a house that you can walk through the front door no matter who you are. You give some information at a desk that's right there, and whether you are an individual that is eligible for Medicaid, we can send you down the hallway to the room that you can enroll in Medicaid there. Or if you are a small group employer, you can go upstairs, and we're going to then be able to allow you to shop for plans, whether it's Medicaid or the commercial side, individual market or the small employer market, enroll in those plans, all walking through that same door.
Do you think making things more user-friendly, sort of giving people the ability to compare plans right next to each other, is going to shape the health insurance industry actually shape the offerings in any significant way?
You're right on point there. First of all, there's going to be standardized plans. So you're, for the first time, you don't have to call up a carrier and say, now tell me what those benefits are again. You're going to be able to look there, just like you do with Travelocity, with airfare, what's first class, what's second class, what's coach, and compare those plans straight across. It's kind of like putting up, to some degree, the nutritional value of the healthcare plans, like when you buy food, you get to see you know, whether it's good for you or not.
Is whatever comes from the federal government that's shared sort of among all these states likely, you think, to be some sort of lesser product than what you'll be able to provide in Oregon?
I don't know if it's going to be a lesser product because every state's somewhat different. But if you're having a problem or you have a question about, I live in, you know, southern Oregon in this particular town, what's available for me there? We want somebody in Oregon to answer that question that knows Oregon carriers. We want kind of that touch that we can make in Oregon that the federal government can't do. Plus, there are quality indicators. You know, we used the Quality Corporation for the state to help us decide on what the quality, the medical quality indicators are for grading our plans. Those are ones that Oregon citizens had input into, not federal political or legislative process.
Rocky King is executive director of Cover Oregon, the health insurance exchange that's being set up in that state. Thank you so much.
You got it, Jeff. Thank you.
And finally, as we finish this first podcast of the new year, we have just a moment to note one passing from last year. Korean pop star Psy announced last night on Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve that aside from a few already scheduled performances, he is retiring Gangnam Style. It was arguably the year's most popular song, but it became, in Psy's words, too popular, and he needs to do something new, evidently. Gangnam Style, we will always have 2012. That's it for today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.